It's Illum Group's Andrea Lay, PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills, Sri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom, and I'm coming to you today from the Catskills. I'll be playing Heckingers Tuesdays and Thursdays. Before we get to the CBG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of May 6th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them dependably intriguing. We hope you do too. We're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Over to you, Sri.
In case you're wondering what this background is, I'm at my father-in-law's house all the way in Chennai, India for the next couple of weeks. So what's the message of the week? Kroger Precision Marketing strikes a partnership with none other than Yahoo DSP. So Yahoo DSP advertisers now have access to KPM's audiences for both reach and measurement. Partnership marks KPM's second DSP partnership since last fall and ushers in a new focus on commerce media for Yahoo advertising in particular. Collaborations like this one will define the next phase of growth in retail media as retailers recognize the limitations of monetization on their own digital properties and seek incremental growth by expanding offsite. This is said by Sara Marzano, principal analyst at eMarketer. For advertisers, the delayed but still impending deprecation of third-party cookies, which is now on its way, continues to underpin every decision regarding digital advertising dollars. So solutions that safeguard their investments against that will hold increasing appeal. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Walmart adds a new grocery line to its private brands portfolio. Walmart has announced a new private label grocery brand called Better Goods. The line includes 300 items spanning categories such as frozen, dairy, snacks, beverages, pasta, soups, coffee, and chocolate. With most items priced under $5, Better Goods focuses on three key components: culinary experiences, plant-based, and made without. The retailer said Better Goods marks not only its largest private food brand launch in two decades, but also its fastest grocery brand brought to market. Over to you, Melissa.
Thanks, Andrea. So Save Mart companies roll out in-store retail media networks. It's not enough that we have online. Now we're moving to in-store retail media networks. The Save Mart companies plans to roll out In-Store Connect, an in-store retail media network powered by Quad Graphics Inc. To start, 16 of the grocery company stores will have digital screens, kiosks, end caps, shelf screens, and vertical banners throughout, allowing CPG partners to showcase promotions, product information, and recommendations to shoppers. The program will eventually roll out to all of the Save Mart companies, approximately 200 stores. This is Save Mart's latest retail media effort, coming almost a year after a launch of its own retail media network. Over to you, Peter.
Thanks, Melissa. Rite Aid expands Uber Eats partnership for alcohol delivery in 8 states. Nearly 1,000 Rite Aid stores will now offer alcohol delivery via retailers' expanded partnership with Uber Eats. Customers of legal drinking age can get delivery from select stores in California, Idaho, Michigan, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Virginia, and Washington. Quote, our collaboration and trusted partnership with Uber Eats underscores our commitment to meet the evolving needs of our customers and providing a seamless digital shopping experience that complements their busy lives, unquote, said Jeannie Walden, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at Rite Aid, the U.S.'s third largest pharmacy retailer. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sri and Peter.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. I'm Sri, one of the aforementioned CPG Guys, and my co-host, of course, is the man with the four letters, PVSB, also the VP of Commercial Strategy at Fetch Rewards, a mobile loyalty platform. I'll join me in welcoming the other CPG guy from the East Coast, all the way from Connecticut, Mr. Bond. Peter, how y'all doing today?
I'm doing great, Sri. I'm regaling over the fact that you were complaining recently about the fact that we were wearing hockey jerseys at a recent conference we attended, and why were we wearing hockey? So what did I do? I went and created us this wonderful baseball swag. Are you happy with it? I mean, what's going on here?
I love the jersey, except you can't show the wonderful number you're sporting, which is Jackie Robinson.
I do have the number 42 right here.
There we go.
I know.
A lot of history behind that number. But of course, Peter, we're 2 weeks away from the midseason break of Major League Baseball. And two people I know are going to the All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby. I wonder who they are.
No idea, Sri. Could be us, maybe. Oh, wait, it's us. We're going.
Maybe if you follow the CPG guys, we can solve that mystery. Who's going to the All-Star Game right here in Los Angeles? Thank you, Peter. And before we get to our guests, let me remind our audience that all of our content can be found by going to a browser and typing cpgguys.com. We have a brand new website with all sorts of rich content, including a merch store and episodes organized into themes like retail media, loyalty. Sign up there for our forthcoming newsletter. Hey, y'all told us y'all wanted water bottles, y'all wanted t-shirts, y'all wanted sweatshirts. So that's what Peter and I did. So check out the merch store. If you like something, go ahead and pick it up. If you aren't already following us on LinkedIn, just enter CPG Guys in the search box of LinkedIn.com. And when you get to our page, simply click follow. That way you'll get to see all of the content we are producing. And the best thing about it, we don't charge for it. Wait, Peter, we don't charge for this?
Free, Sri. It's big donuts. We're an educational podcast. It's not like the New York Yankees where all of their games this year are on pay TV. Basically, discouraging any new young consumers from ever watching the Yankees. We want to encourage people to follow CPG, so we don't charge for our content.
And neither is it like the $200 million payroll of the Los Angeles Dodgers, the LADs. Interesting. Remember to check out the FMCG Guys podcast hosted by our friends Daniel and Efrain. They take the CPG Guys podcast format across the pond and over the Atlantic as they speak to retail and FMCG luminaries from a European perspective. Just visit fmcgguys.com on a browser. And we're, of course, proud partners of Next Up, also known as the Network of Executive Women, whose mission it is to advance all women in business and to promote the cause of gender equality and career development. Visit nextupisnow.org/cpgguys. We've got our own page, Peter, to learn more about this great group. And in the middle of Wednesday episodes, you can find hidden an Easter egg from the CPG Guys on Next Up's upcoming seminars and events. How about that, Peter? Next Up has own landing page for us.
Must mean we are credible and we're part of the journey and the cause, which is what excites us the most.
As my daughter used to say when she was 6 years old, we was important, Peter. Of course, Peter and I are very honored that our podcast attracts so many omnichannel leaders from notable brands, retailers, and today we're especially pleased to have such a guest. A personal friend that I know through the industry, another person on the digital evangelist journey, and also brick and mortar train. Not too many people like that in the industry. She's the VP of Digital Commerce and DTC from Mondelez International. In this role, she leads a team of leaders responsible for anything digital commerce, including pure play retailers, DTC, direct-to-consumer sites, and all the capabilities to be successful in this omnichannel journey. Join Peter and me in welcoming to the podcast, Francesca Hahn. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Such an honor to be here. I'm a little bit fangirling with you guys because I've listened to a ton of your podcasts and share it everywhere. So really glad to be here.
Thank you, Francesca. And before we get to the questions, let's take a minute for you to tell our audience about where they can learn more about Mondelez International and then a brief overview of what your team actually does.
Sure. So for those not familiar with Mondelez, we're a family of many snacking brands, sweet, savory, confection, including Oreo, Ritz, Sour Patch Kids, among many other amazing brands. And we can be found on MondelezInternational.com. We have a really strong LinkedIn profile, as well as you can find more about our brands on Snackworks.com, Oreo.com, and SourPatchKids.com. And as for what my team does, you summed it up quite well, Sri. Thank you. My team is U.S. focused. They've got full P&L responsibility for Amazon and all pure play and direct to consumer, as well as you said, we support all the omni customers with knowledge and capabilities.
Thank you for that, Francesca. We'll, of course, include hyperlinks to the site addresses you mentioned in our episode digital liner notes. And for audience, of course, with the new rich format that we have on our website, this episode, just like every other episode, will have its own page, and you can get all of these details Francesca just spoke about, the questions we asked, or all of it on that podcast page, and a link to be able to click and go to any podcasting platform of your choice that includes Apple, Spotify and the 40 plus that we partner with. So I'm going to jump right in, Francesca. This is going to be a fun episode. You and I have a similar background having come through omnichannel ourselves. So I'm going to start with the first question here, and that is about your career. Your story started in category management at top tiers such as PepsiCo, Diageo, Colgate, evolving then into sales leadership roles, a stint in Germany, which we'd love to learn about, e-commerce, baby, and then emerging as a digital commerce leader here at Mondelez. Decompose this for our audience. How did all this come to be, and how did you end up at Mondelez?
Yes. So as you mentioned, I started out in category management, but I've always been super shopper focused, love partnering with retailers to grow the businesses together. I've also been in the same world as Peter. I actually was on dunnhumby when I was at Colgate Palmolive, figuring out how to leverage all that amazing data that we got from dunnhumby at Kroger. And really, most of my career has ended up being a lot of these roles that have big changes. We need to transform something. We need to build something big. And of course, digital commerce is definitely in that realm. So I got into e-commerce while in Germany, working for Colgate-Palmolive, where I was leading a team that was this commercial center of excellence. It was quite a small topic at that time, but we needed to create a channel strategy so that we had a more solid Amazon business among all the omni-channel sellers. Ended up creating a Europe strategy at that point, and then was part of creating the global e-commerce strategy. And this just little experience got me a call to lead the e-commerce pet food for Hill's Pet, which is a division of Colgate. And it was just as pet food was exploding about 6-7 years ago. And at the time when a little online site called Chewy.com had also just launched, which for those not as familiar, it's now a huge pet food online retailer. So I loved all this challenging experiences, loved this constant influencing and building that you get to do in digital commerce and the endless learning. And so I've stayed close to e-com and digital. And now I've been at Mondelez over a year, and it's been really fun ride working with these amazing brands and the talent.
Hey, Francesca, welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. It's great to know the overlap, certainly the customer data science from dunnhumby working at Kroger, but not only that, category management. I started in 1995. I was part of the very first Safeway Escop project ever. We were in the Clackamas, Oregon office for the Safeway division there. And I was representing Hart's Pet Care. So we also overlap from our involvement in the pet industry. So very fascinating. And I love your background because it so dovetails with my experiences as well. Love to know from you, why is digital commerce a real priority now for Mondelez International, particularly in the last couple of years? You know, we chatted a little bit before the conversation about some of the work you're doing with other retailers, e-com, pure play, and what have you. But is it just about e-commerce, or does it have broader omni-channel drivers in terms of the influence that it's having?
Yeah, I'd say before the pandemic, it was more traditional, like digital marketing efforts and ensuring that we were showing up and we were driving awareness online. But certainly the pandemic then drove this amazing amount of grocery penetration with these online retailers. I mean, we had to be there, and luckily we were there in one way or form, but we've really now had to really speed up our capabilities so that we can be successful and be really well found. As well as what we're finding is that our sales have high digital attribution, meaning people are also looking at ratings, reviews. They're trying to find the products online and then maybe going and buying it in store. It's really important to the future of our business. And so for the future, we need to be that indispensable partner with retailers so that we're able to partner with them and drive revenue. We need to make sure that our digital commerce house is in order from the foundation up. We need to build our brands digital first. We need to be found easily. We need to be able to ensure that shoppers can learn and then, of course, ultimately buy and potentially put a subscription in place so that they can continue to buy in the future.
And Francesca, because it is so important and it's in your remit these days to build the omnichannel capabilities as we set up top, right? So how are you working to ensure that the company is omnichannel ready? What are some specific initiatives, actions you're taking? And let's focus specifically on search as you work in this area. And I mean search, retail media search.
Yes. So first of all, it always starts with content first. To be omnichannel ready, we need to make sure that we have consistent, optimized content across all the retailers as the number one starting point. That ultimately helps you generate the organic search, so before you have to pay for it. So we want to make sure that our product is as relevant so that we show up higher on the digital shelf. And it's much more efficient than paying for the search. And then if the content is super appealing, we can generate conversion or sales just on the page right away as people are finding us. With that said, paid search is a big focus. It has a high return on investment. We've continued to do a lot of validations on return on investment, and it keeps being reconfirmed that search is so important to our long-term strategy.
Francesca, I don't think it's any surprise to people listening to this podcast, my fascination with content, particularly around ratings and reviews. Would like to hear from you how you see content, be it what you place on the page or what you're able to source from feedback from consumers in the form of ratings and reviews. How is that contributing to your focus on winning search on the digital shelf?
We do have a robust ratings and reviews process and with content, but I would call this a very heterogeneous situation right now, because shoppers are all over the board, depending on the categories that they're engaging with, as well as retailers are also in a lot of different places at this point. If we talk generally, I do think ratings and reviews are table stakes, and especially for mass retailers, because they're selling things that are high research. For example, furniture, electronics, car seats. So it's really important that they have that. And of course, if we're selling product on those sites too, we need to have the ratings and reviews. You can't be absent from that. For grocery, it's interesting. Even today, some retailers still don't have ratings and reviews because in their belief, it wasn't likely super relevant. Yet many retailers now want to be in marketplaces. They want to sell other products besides what's in a typical grocery store. And so now they're needing to add ratings and reviews so that they can close that gap versus the competition. And once they add the capability, we need to make sure that we, again, are at least par with our competition when people are on their sites looking. As a shopper, if you're loyal to a retailer, it may not matter as much with reviews because you trust the retailer ideally. But if they're shopping around for something specific, like a new product, it could still be a determining factor. I also do think that some shoppers are sophisticated and know that some reviews may not be authentic. You know, that's part of the business. And then I think back to the fact that I do think that there are certain retailer algorithms that do take into account ratings and reviews, either to have them at 4-star plus a certain quantity. So again, we have to, as a CPG, want to make sure that we're being as relevant and that we're coming up when people are searching snacks, as an example. One more comment too is also unauthorized sellers are happening in marketplace type of retailers. And so we have to ensure that we're managing that bad reviews are not getting attached to the products that we're selling direct to these retailers. So that's incredibly important that we disconnect that, or we take care of it in some way or form, or react to it so that shoppers know that that's not our product, that somebody else is selling the product to them. So it's again, a very heterogeneous and complicated situation, but I do think you have to have a strategy, because if not, you'll be left behind.
Before I pass it on to Sri, just a couple of comments on that. One, I agree with you. Grocery retail has been the channel that has adopted ratings and reviews the slowest, but Albertsons just launched in the last month. That's going to probably put a lot of pressure on a certain company in Cincinnati to do something. I suspect that the biggest marketplace in grocery will probably follow suit pretty quickly. And I can just tell you from information that Walmart Connect recently released, 82% of their shoppers use the mobile app or the mobile site to do research while they're walking a physical store. And they're typically doing it between 2 and 4 times a visit. So some of that's going to be content. And I've told a story on this podcast so many times, Sri's probably sick of it. And I'm not going to do it again, other than to say that if you're a retailer and your point, you're right, it is table stakes. But if you're a retailer and you don't offer it and someone opens up the app and they can't find it, there's a company in Seattle that's got a lot of content that's more than happy to try and steal your shopper right out of your physical store. So I think you're spot on in so much of what you said there. Sri?
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Francesco. Let me remind our audience that we're speaking to Francesco Hahn, VP of digital commerce and D2C at Mondelez International. So I'm going to dive into that very word, D2C, direct to consumer. You know, way in the past, I've been known to say that D2C is the kryptonite for large brands. So it seems every brand these days is focused on delivering some sort of a direct partnership with the consumer, especially if subscriptions are an option. What's your focus here? What are you doing on subscriptions?
Yeah, so I'm coming from a grocery products perspective that can reflect and understand what you're saying. What our perspective is that if you need to have an experience in a direct-to-consumer site that elevates the brand. We have two direct-to-consumer sites in the U.S., Oreo.com and SourPatchKids.com, both which have really premium experiences. The Oreo ID, which I know you guys know well about, regarding this very customized experience with custom cream, custom dip, sprinkles. You can put your own customized face on it. And it comes in this really nice premium box. And so it's very giftable and an experience that really will connect to people around some kind of moment in their life. And Sour Patch Kids also has a very nice customized box, customized inside in terms of the flavors, the orange or the red. You can pick your Yankees colors. So you have the options there that really can customize and elevate with our brand. And I think that is definitely proven to be a great experience. And so we find that we'll continue with that experience. But I think also there's a big value to creating those direct relationships with consumers. And we see direct consumer as a one way to do that. We don't have subscription yet. I love the push. I think for us, it needs to land an experience that we can sustainably deliver that is better than what Amazon can execute, truly. So if we can feel that we can achieve that, then you may see a subscription at some point in our future.
I think a subscription on the Toblerone brand would play very well on the Bond household. I'm not saying anything. I'll take the blame for that. No one else in the household. We got a couple of chocoholics there. But one of the things we've really talked about with a lot of e-commerce leaders in this industry, Francesca, is about building a team that can execute with all the precision and the understanding. I mean, 5 years ago, it was basically the Amazon team, right? And they were experts at Amazon. But that's changed. And you really need people who understand not just the retail media platform of a retailer in question, but it's very much about just understanding omnichannel in general. And what I'd like to know from you is how you're focused on building a team and what is your team really focused on around strategy and execution so you know that you're achieving the objectives that the organization has set for you?
Our team is now much more wide than it was 5 years ago. We've got, of course, the traditional sales. We've got the omni people. We've got content, performance marketing, insights and analytics, sales planning. We've got tremendous amount of resources of people because to be successful in digital commerce, you do need a lot of functions focused. And our team is both strategic and execution oriented. We have in-year budget plans for pure play, direct consumer, and omnichannel. We also have 3-year strategic plans with work streams that need a lot of extraordinary support so that we can achieve the goals that we have in the next 3 to 10 years. Plus, we need to drive a culture within Mondelez of capability building. We have to ensure that our team is ready for where the business will be. And so the expectation is that we are thinking short and long term. We're bringing everyone along on the journey with us. And we've built a really strong and diverse, inclusive team of primarily Mondelez talent. We do hire external for some expertise, but we're very fortunate to have a lot of strong talent. Plus, with the company being fairly large, I find influencing and knowing how to get things done is really important for our team, for us to be successful in the future.
So right, Francesca. I've always felt e-commerce roles are a lot about influence. Simply counting the numbers don't work. You got to be able to change the mindset of the whole company. And speaking of that, you know, with brands that are sold in multiple outlets, many formats, omni-channel, globally, there's a large organization outside of your team. So how are you ensuring or taking those that are not on your team with you in this omnichannel journey?
I would say a vision from the top is essential to be successful in e-commerce or omnichannel. And it really does start from our highest of leadership team. And globally, we've declared that we believe that 20% of our business will be digital commerce by 2030. That's pretty bold ambition, but it helps solidify the importance and focus for everyone below, right? So it's really important. And then for the US, what I find is most people have never done e-commerce or omnichannel job in Mondelez, and yet we are everywhere. And so we need to try to get as much knowledge out into all the functions that we can. We are direct store delivery. So we've got people on the ground that really need to understand, how do we win in an omnichannel world? So from a leadership perspective, we try to influence from really a human level, bringing them along on the journey. What I know from with Mondelez people is that everyone wants to be super successful. They want to sell a lot of cookies and crackers. They just need to know how and not be intimidated by the jargon or the acronyms, which you guys are so good about. That's, you know, just piecing it out so that it's as simple as possible. We have a flywheel training, you know, all the ways to be successful online, and we've broken it down by function. We recruit high potential champions who help create and be trainers for all these different functions. We also try to create easy things to remember, easy sayings. For example, the shelf is the warehouse for e-commerce. The E in e-commerce is for everyone, and now it's everywhere. Every item we sell is e-commerce. Every customer is e-commerce at this point. These sayings tend to stick in people's minds. It tends to resonate. It's easy to understand. And then we'll also try to equivalize what happens in store to online. The difference between an in-store aisle and online, it's not that different. Yes, there's differences, but we explain why, and it tends to resonate. You know, what's display online versus display in store? So if we go through that, usually it becomes more simple and it's not as intimidating. And then my team and myself and a lot of my peers, we try to influence and make digital commerce approachable and fun. We talk about that we're all superheroes, that everyone in Mondelez has the superpower within them to be successful with omnichannel. And so that kind of brings them along on the journey as well.
I love how you are trying to and successfully relating components of how you drive consumer engagement online to what's done in the store. Like, what is the digital equivalent of the lobby display? What is the digital equivalent of the circular? And I think when you start making it relatable, you do build an understanding and people, you bring them along for the journey. I mean, that's frankly why Sri and I try to break down every acronym we mention on this podcast, because we realize there are people that have never heard it before. And if you assume that they have, you're going to be disappointed. But if you educate them, they can keep up with what you're talking about, and they're along for the journey. And that just makes your mission so much more successful. Obviously, we've got this great pandemic that's been going on now for over 2 years. You're at a point now where you can probably share with us some key learnings since the beginning of it that our audience should really focus on in terms of how you build a successful business with so much change and unpredictability going on.
I speak a lot about building for agility, that what we know is what's happened over 2 years, and frankly, we're still in the middle of a lot of change, that we can't predict exactly what's going to happen. So how do you plan in ranges? How do you plan investment at more of a rate versus actual absolute dollars? Thinking about how we be more flexible with where resources go. And, you know, someone may be working on this now, but they may adjust very quickly. They're not going to be in that role for 20 years. You know, we're going to adjust and be able to flex. So building for agility will help us be more successful in the future. I'm a big fan of testing and learning because, frankly, things are continuing to change and we need to keep trying new things and new ways of doing things. I actually say test, learn, fail, or scale, and actually put fail in front of scale, because sometimes failing, if you're learning from that, it could even be more important for the organization. I also think we need to be really humble, show humility that as a leader, We don't have all the answers. None of us have been through the situation that we've been in over the last 2 years. And we need to be transparent about that. Be transparent with our partners, our retailer partners, our agency partners, and bring people along on the journey so that we can work through these problems and challenges together. And I think you'll relate well with this, Peter, as well. Focusing on the data is super important. Being able to use our data science and partnerships has really demonstrated us to be able to see where the growth is pretty quickly so that we can prioritize our efforts and be agile and put resources towards where we think the growth is coming from.
You know, we've hit up the pandemic and quite a bit about how you're getting ready, but I want to jump a little forward, right? It doesn't look like these habits that have formed over the last 24 odd months, they're going to be sticky. They're not going to go away. Do you agree, first of all? And if you agree in the role that you're playing, look future forward and how you're preparing for this continuous transformation.
Sri, you're 100% right. Shoppers have discovered how easy it is to order online, pick up at store, how to order to home. And a lot of their snacks are going home right now through different online retailer sites. And plus, the apps are on their phones. Credit cards are connected. And frankly, the platforms and many of these retailers are prompting them to reorder very quickly. And so it's here, and I get asked by executives pretty routinely, is the growth rate slowing down? No, I don't see it at all. Frankly, in some places, I just saw an article talking about how last miler behavior is moving to daily shopping, not weekly. So there, again, changes here, and we don't see the growth rate slowing down. In terms of work to be done, I'm focusing a lot on omni and the fact that it's expensive for retailers who've built stores and logistics systems that were prior to the pandemic. They're not made for click and collect or buy online, pick up in store, or for the last milers like Instacart, DoorDash, picking up products off their shelf. A few omni orders could wipe the shelves off to BMD, which is a bad experience for everybody. And plus, it's incredibly labor intensive at stores. It's expensive for retailers. And they're going to need to completely rethink how they're doing this. We're seeing some dark stores at some retailers. Kroger, of course, has brought on board Ocado, which I'm seeing some reports saying that they have a 3-year payback. That's actually pretty incredible to hear 3-year payback with the investments in one of these Ocado locations. So as a consumer packaged goods company, we need to figure out how we service those retailers differently for the future in this new omni world. So that's something I'm working on. All the answers are not here because we're in such the midst of such change at this point.
Thank you. And Peter, a power-packed episode talking about everything from search, the importance of content, how to prepare for the future, people, leadership, teams, how to prepare the rest of the organization, the fact that, you know, people in the omni-channel journey have to be good at influencing, motivating versus just counting the numbers, etc. It looks like we've covered a whole spectrum. So let me remind our audience that you can find us easily by simply going to a browser, typing cpgguys.com. You can find all of our content there. And if you think your company has some thought leadership to contribute to our community discussion, simply drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. And maybe you can join us here on the podcast and have such a great conversation. Don't forget to drop us a rating. And now it's on cpgguys.com, our new rich website. At the top navigation bar, you can find a link to give us a rating. Why we ask you for that? The rating tells you how we're doing. If you choose to write a review, we'll also know if we got it right with the rating. Who you like on the show, you shape it. What topics you want to discuss, etc. Thank you to the close to 14,000 followers. We know you love us. We love you back. You know, without y'all, this show doesn't exist. Francesca, thank you for joining us and giving us the color commentary on what's going on at Mondelez from an omnichannel standpoint.
Sri, thank you for having me. Peter, thank you. And look forward to more of your podcasts.
Mr. Bond, any closing thoughts? You know, pleasure doing this, man, week over week with you.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, having someone with similar background in category management and customer data science, it reinforces my perceptions. And it's good to see that they seem to be on track. I loved hearing that content is table stakes. If you're a brand and you don't understand that by now, you're not going to win search. I mean, it's just straight up that simple. And it's not just your product description and the number of images. It's also feedback from other shoppers who have purchased a product and they tell you what they think about it. Social trust is very important to shoppers these days. I loved what she said about having a team that has flexibility, that can test and learn, and fail or scale. I think that's very telling. And lastly, we need to maintain humility as leaders, understanding there's so much change going on. We don't have all the answers. If we act like we do, we're faking it because it's just not true. We don't have all the answers. So really great conversation, Sri. I love this. Having a brand practitioner in e-commerce on to talk about the trade is absolutely phenomenal. Great episode. And always, as you know, Sri, love getting together with you on this. It's a great summer for us. Can't wait to see what we've got coming ahead.
See you in a couple of weeks here in Los Angeles for the two big games here, the Home Run Derby, as well as the All-Star game. I know Aaron Judge will be, as this is MVP-like year. We'll see some Dodgers for sure. Looking forward. That's a wrap here for this episode. See you soon in another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.